Welcome, everyone. It's Parkside Today on WIPZ-FM. I'm John Melke, and I'll share a little secret that I've been looking forward to today's conversation for weeks. It's a pleasure to welcome Father Steve Varghese, pastor at St. Joseph's Catholic Church and St. John Nepomuk Catholic Church in Racine, and UW Parkside Associate Professor of Business and Executive Director of International Affairs, Dr. Abby Curavilla. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So both of you are from the same state in India, and here you are living and working in the same state, the same communities halfway around the world. What do you see as some of the cultural differences that you observe in each of your roles between where you lived and where you live now? And Abby, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to you, John, for having us. It's an honor to be back at WIPZ 101.5. And it's such an honor to meet Father Steve for the first time. It's interesting that we just met, and it's certainly nice to do this interview with him. So the question was about cultural differences.
I think that was the question. Yeah, that was the question.
Well, we are from the same state. So, you know, just to set some context, a state called Kerala, it's the southernmost state in India and has some great demographic indicators, social indicators that are very different from the rest of the country too. So most Keralites feel very proud about that, and maybe we'll get into a little bit of that. But it is fascinating to be in Kenosha. From Kerala to Kenosha is the right way to say it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many cultural differences. I don't even know, you know, where to start. I think the first thing that comes to my mind is schedules. I think it's very hard to, you know, just randomly meet someone or stop by at their house or, you know, say hello in that way. You always have to call to make an appointment. I think it's very different back home, where you can just literally walk in, you know, and see anyone without making a call. So that's one big difference I have experienced.
And Father Steve, what do you see as some of the differences between your home country and here?
Oh, John, thank you so much. it's so wonderful to be with you and with Abby, and I'm so happy, as you said. I have been looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
At the end, I could find you here at Parkside. So grateful to be here. And, you know, when you told me about Kerala, first thing that come to my mind is, of course, I do think of them because I do speak to my mom almost every day, almost, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for a surprise, our tourism logo is God's Own Country.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So... tourism logo of, just for Kerala, okay? Mm-hmm. So wherever you see the tourist map or tourism logo, is welcome to God's Own Country. Mm-hmm. It speaks a lot about the culture of Kerala, because Kerala, by and large, as Abby mentioned, is a variety of people of mm-hmm. all religions, all cultures, and we can meet everyone. So the best thing about Kerala is it's very green compared to all other states, you know. Mm-hmm. Green in the sense it's tropical, and it is like it's a paradise. Lots of palm trees you find, hill stations. It's really beautiful that way. And plenty of rain. And in summer, it's really hot too. So culturally speaking, what is so beautiful about this Kerala is it is so heartwarming to meet people. Mm. And in terms of education, that's one thing which stands out. In, among all the states in India, Kerala is a 10% literate state. That means everyone is educated. Everyone can at least read or write. That's a beautiful thing. And what I like most is it's really welcoming people. So casual. Mm. They just greet you on the street. They welcome you. Can go into anybody's house, say hello. And one thing which surprises me when I go from this background to home is, for example, when we sit at home for a meal, you know, we are all together, and somebody stops by, immediately my dad tells, come on, sit here, this is it for you, which we never expected, you know. So,
right.
I mean, when you go from here to there, that's a difference that you find, you know. So typically, it's a very welcoming and loving and greeting people. That's what I find.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about growing up in India. What were your families like? Mm-hmm. What were schools like? What was that?
For me, I was so fortunate. I am born and brought up in a very large family. Mm-hmm. Okay, we are 6 siblings, 4 boys and 2 girls. I am the second oldest. Both my parents are alive, very healthy so far. And growing up in a place, Abby was asking me, where are you from? What? Because, you know, Kerala is like a long state, just like Florida, very tropical. So I am from the northern part of Kerala. Northern part is called Kannur. So in English, we say Kannur. Okay. So I am blessed to be part of a nice big family, very traditional family, very Catholic family. And all my schools I did from kindergarten up to high school, I went to the Catholic school of my parish. So that is a big blessing for me.
Okay.
It has to do a lot with us. Maybe we can talk later. Do a lot with my family's connection to the church too, you know. So it's a very typically religious setup and a very strong Catholic foundation. So because we have 2 of my uncles are priests, and I'm really happy that I'm part of that big family. Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And Abby, how about you?
Yeah, I am no priest in my family. But I guess my background is more army based, because my father was in the military engineer services, and so he moved around, you know, quite a bit. We are originally, of course, from Kerala, and one of the things about anyone, you know, from India is that they would identify themselves from the state that they belong to, because every state in India has a different language, and there are about 30 different states, and so every state has its own identity. So. You know, even though everyone says they are Indian, there is more of a little bit more of an attachment to the state that you're from, because ethnically it's different, culturally it's different, you know, linguistically it's different. And so most Keralites would identify with what I'm saying. But yeah, we are from Kerala, and my dad moved around quite a bit. So literally every 3 years we were moving from, you know, one city to another. So I grew up across the country. Although I did my engineering undergraduate degree from Kerala, and that was the time that I was, you know, 4 years I was in the country. But we used to go back every summer for our vacation to Kerala. There are 2 siblings I have, so we are 3. I'm the middle child. I have an older sister and a younger sister. And my parents, you know, I would say, yes, a little bit, you know, kind of traditional, I would say. And culturally, they have actually moved here to take care of my children. I have 3-year-old twins. And so that's part of the culture too, where your parents actually move to help you raise the children, which is wonderful. So my kids don't go to daycare. I'm very, very grateful that 3 years ago they moved, and we all live together in Racine. So.
Well, that's nice. And I think, you know, I was fortunate when I was growing up that both sets of grandparents were close by. And so they were always, you know, they were very much a part of my life, even though one set lived in Kenosha, and in the 1960s, to drive to Kenosha on a Sunday afternoon was like, you know, you were going halfway around the world to get down here from Racine. But I enjoyed that. So, Father Steve, you touched on it just a little bit, but when did you first start thinking about a calling as a pastor, or how does that start in your life?
Well, that's a good question. That's a, you know, when you come to this country too, that's a one question people ask. You know, I still remember I began my ministry here in the States in 2003.
Okay.
My first parish was not far from here, Holy Rosary, Our Lady of the Holy Rosary. And it is on 22nd and 40th Street of Kenosha. I still remember they had a big, very nice reception for me first time, and I said the Mass, and very nice reception. So rather large community, and we were in the basement, Tisamon Hall. So people line up to come and greet me, you know. So we had some refreshments, coffee and so on for everyone. And still remember people come and greet me. Towards the end, two, three of them stood together and asked me, "Father, can we ask you this question? Don't be embarrassed." I said, "What is that question?" "Okay, sure, you know. So tell us, when did you become a Catholic?" You know, it's a good, you know, that is a really a good question, because people, I'm a stranger here, correct? 2003, sure. I am come to this parish. I arrived in July. September, I took charge of Holy Rosary here. And they see me first time, you know, a person from India, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very often when you think of India, all that you think is, you know, first picture that comes to most of the people's mind is snake charmers or things like that, you know, what you see on the travel channel or things of that nature. So how can there be a Catholic Christian population in India, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I did have to tell my parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, they were all Catholic for a long time.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So the whole history goes back to the arrival of St. Thomas the Apostle in 52 AD, actually. So that's how the beginning of Christianity in Kerala. It's a long, big tradition. Mm. So what prompted me to be a priest, or in terms here, a minister,
mm-hmm.
it's a big, it's a lot of things that really went through my mind. As a child, I was an altar server. I must have mentioned this at the home in my sermon at the church too. As a child growing up in a parish, I was selected to be an altar server. And I really loved to proclaim the word, say the words, and be part of the celebration of the Mass. Then slowly I was also part of a group called Mission League. So it is like a... It is founded under the patronage of St. Teresa of Child Jesus, or we call Little Flower. She has three different names in Little Flower, Child Jesus, and also there is one more name for her. So it is a very, very mission-oriented group. So as kids, we are taught a lot of things about missions. We are taught all about vocation, spirituality, and so on. So that really inspired me a lot. And in my high school days, one religious sister, I still remember Sister Grace, looked into my eyes and said, after we were doing the classes, she said, "I think you have a call to become a priest. Maybe mm-hmm. you should try it out."
Mm-hmm.
So that really inspired me. I did think about this. Then after 2 years, it helped me to discern, to begin this journey.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And Professor Dr. Kuravilla, international affairs, how did you decide that, oh, education or higher education is where I feel I'm going to be a good fit?
So, you know, just to kind of speak a little bit more to St. Thomas coming to India, you know, so just to emphasize that St. Thomas did come to India in the very first century. And so he came to Kerala, and so that's how the first Christians in Kerala, you know, were born, literally. But then the interesting fact is that Christianity came to Kerala in the first century before it even went to the West. And so that's something that, you know, historically a lot of people are not aware of, and that's something that's very unique about different about Kerala. So
it is.
So my parents have always emphasized education, you know, and I think most Kerala families would do that. I think that's a big part of the culture. That's a big part of who we have been as a, you know, as a family and as generations. And so they've always wanted us to really push to you know, the highest levels of education possible.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was a doctor in our you know, little town in Kerala,
mm-hmm.
and none of his children became doctors. And he had this clinic that he was running that everybody in the town knew him. And so me, as the oldest grandson, everybody thought that I would become the doctor in the family who would take over his clinic and run it in the town. And I was very interested to go into medical school, and I worked very hard for it. And fortunately or unfortunately, I did not get into medical school.
Okay.
Looking back, I'm grateful I did not. But at that time, it was very difficult, you know, recognition of the fact that I did not get into medical school because it was a big failure. And it, you know, my expectations and the expectations of my family, because I was letting everyone down. But medical school was also one of the most competitive things to get into in India, particularly in Kerala. But I got into engineering, which is equally competitive and very desirable for a lot of people. But somehow for me, it was not. But I got into, you know, got through engineering school. I did well. And then I was teaching in Chandigarh, which is a city in the north. And I was helping a friend of mine, actually a neighbor of mine, who was preparing for his graduate record exam because he wanted to come to the U.S. And I would just go to his house every day and, you know, go over math because I was great at math and logic and reasoning. And in that process, started thinking, why don't I, you know, give the same exam that he is giving, and just for the adventure of it, you know, explore the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So he and I gave the exam at the same time, and he got into University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and I got into University of Louisville with a full scholarship, thinking that I would just study and get my master's here for 2 years and go back, because I had my job and I'd taken leave for 2 years, which you can in India.
Mm-hmm.
But after coming here, my professor, who incidentally was also from Kerala, Dr. Suraj Alexander, and my advisor, he encouraged me to continue into the PhD program, and he said he would continue the scholarship. And he thought, you know, you talked about the sister talking to you. He talked to me about really pursuing and getting a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I listened to him, and of course, all the backing of the family to, you know, attain whatever is possible in education. And so once I finished my PhD, you know, and by the time I'd fallen in love with the U.S., I really loved the country and the potential that it had for teachers and educators and universities, what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just fascinated, and I just had to stay. So that's my story.
Interesting.
Very
interesting. Good,
yeah.
Well, and I'm going to toss this back over to Father Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been a challenge for you to connect in the region, and does your profession help you make that connection? Because both of you are dealing every day with so many different people.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, for me, coming from outside the country, you know, first of all, when you are a priest, certainly you are appointed in a parish. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it works here. So my background of coming to U.S. is quite different from Dr. Abbey. So I'm a religious order priest called the Palatines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a worldwide. So in India, we have nearly 500 priests out there now. And it is founded under the patronage of St. Vincent Palatti. So he's a Italian, and our headquarters are in Rome. So most of us would go there, study, come back. We have headquarters, provinces means regions, or eparchies all over the world, almost like 25 countries we are there. So in 2003, I was proposed to the province of Milwaukee. In the U.S., we have two provinces. One is called the Midwest, which is centered here in Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is the Eastern province. That is in Maryland. So we have two provinces here. So I was suggested to be part of the province here, to come and help them here to establish. Also, my goal here when I work here, so I'm given to this province. I'm already a member here. And when we work, our work is always to support the province here as well as in India. A lot of mission work.
Okay.
So coming back to your question now, how do you relate with the people?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think growing up in India, as Abby said, it is a blessing to move around in India. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when I studied for priesthood, it's like 13 years of studies in India for my religious studies, varies from various organizations. So first I began in Tamil Nadu. So again, Tamil Nadu is the a state very close to Kerala, and they speak a completely different language, Tamil.
Mm.
Okay, the food habits are so different. Then I came back to Kerala. Then I went all the way to the Midwestern part of India. It's called South Goa. So I did my philosophy there, and from there, if you go to Goa, it's like working or being in a foreign country or Western world. Mm. So it's very similar to that. So I studied there, worked there, then came to Bangalore. So from my for my novitiate, then I did my college and my theology in Nagpur, the central part of India. So moving from state to state, going from place to place in India, and being with the people and being celebrating with the people, it's like going from one country to another country, literally. Mm-hmm. So that has really given me an outlook on life. It's so different. I can only say it's different. You need to be there to experience that. Okay, the food habits are so different. How people look, their looks are different. The language, as you mentioned, is we have 18 different national languages, not dialects. Okay, languages are there. So I can hardly follow many of those languages. You know, so being here for me, it is a big eye opener. And when you come as a priest, certainly people will respect you. People will welcome you. It's a really great, good thing. But what I like most is being a priest here is like, I mean, anywhere. It's like I'm so much part of the whole cycle of life, you know, especially beginning with baptism, the first communion, and celebration every Sunday, confirmation, all the sacraments. I mean, it's like, you know, a wedding. It's a very, very special occasions, the life of people. And, of course, we go, we transition from this life to our world. Today I had a funeral. So it's like my ministry is to be so close to people, to be part and parcel of their life, all different stages. So it's for me, it's like a big part of myself itself, you know, it's just giving of myself. I'm so happy to be part of these various stages of the life of people. And for me, it's a really self-fulfilling experience to be part of that.
Interesting.
So I'm so happy.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm. And Dr. Kerrville, I know that you're involved with students at varying stages of their life as well.
Yes, but certainly not as powerful or as deep as Father Steve. I think it's so, you know, so nice to hear the impact that, you know, that kind of a relationship would have on any individual. I think it's beautiful. I think it's so beautiful that you get to do that and, you know, you are engaged in that literally the whole lifetime. Of course, we are, you know, we have a snapshot. We do try to extend that period as much as possible in our own ways. But then we are limited to the time that a student is here in a college for a four-year period at the most, right? And then particularly, I think, for a professor, it's limited to the time that he has in that specific semester. Some of the ways I try to extend that is I have office hours, and it is not required, but students get extra credit if they come and spend time in my office and not talk about the class. So we could talk about anything else outside the class, but not about the class. And so if they come, then they get another 2 percentage points. And so most students do that. Mm-hmm. And for me, I found that to be a very powerful way of connecting with the students, because you give a lecture and it's very limited and it's very, you know, superficial. It's technical in a way. But then when you have the time in your office where you spend half an hour and it cannot be about college, then I really find students opening up about, you know, maybe challenges that they have in the education or, you know, personal, not that I want to hear personal issues, but I want to know how college life relates to some of the issues they might be having so I can be a better teacher. And so those times really, you know, expand that relationship in a very powerful way for me. And very often it goes beyond that. So because of those connections, then the students very often ask for a reference letter once they graduate or once they get a job or they ask for advice. You know, long after students graduate, I'm in touch with them, just with, you know, career counseling or guidance regarding what they want to do or recommendation letters and so on. So I would say, of course, the interval of time is very limited as an educator, a lot less than Father Steve. But I think we do have, as educators, a great role, secular educators, a great role in impact that can be very positive and can be very powerful. So it's great that we are, you know, both able to serve.
I should say that's a very, also to say, very important stage of their life. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we as ministers, we don't get much involved unless you are in the ministry of education, typically as you are. This is a very critical stage of their life mm-hmm. where they seek guidance. It's a powerful witness like you are very important. That's I applaud you for that. Oh, it's awesome.
Thank you, and I applaud you too.
Well, it's listening to some of the responses on some of the questions here. My final question, because we are getting close to our time here today, but the time goes by always very quickly. Mm-hmm. If someone was to approach you. Someone were to approach you and say, well, I'm thinking about traveling over to India. What would you tell them? It has to be on the must-see list. And just in listening to the responses today, that must-see list could be anywhere from, you could spend months, years there, right?
Absolutely.
And not see it all. But but if you had a short amount of time.
I would, of course, you know, what else would you expect than Kerala, right?
Kerala.
For both of us would say that.
You got to go there.
Kerala was, not because we are saying it, but Kerala was called by National Geographic about 18, 19 years ago, named by National Geographic as one of the top 10 destinations one should see in their lifetime. Oh. So if you don't believe us, you should believe National Geographic.
Sure.
And if you don't believe that, then you should listen to Discovery, because Discovery called it one of the top 10 paradises in the world. Mm-hmm. And if you don't listen to Discovery, then BBC also called it one of the top destinations. I don't remember what sobriquet they gave it. But a lot of, you know, Condé Nast Traveler, there are so many, you know, public bodies, tourism bodies that have rated Kerala as one of the top destinations just visually. But I think some of the more fascinating things about Kerala are, for example, the status of women. The ratio of women to men is higher in Kerala than it is. Actually, it's positive, and it's negative in the rest of the country. Mm. So more women to men. And also many families, in fact, some of the, I would say, communities in Kerala have a matriarchal system where the property, ancestral property, goes to the daughter as opposed to the son. And typically it goes to the son in everywhere around India.
Mm-hmm.
So you can think about the, you know, the role that a woman can play and plays. And therefore the, you know, position and status of women in Kerala that, you know, most people in Kerala feel very proud about saying that, besides, of course, the literacy levels and education and professionals and so on. So the backwaters of Kerala, which is a stretch mm-hmm. of water that is connected to the ocean, but really, it's one of the most beautiful parts to visit. And you can, you know, hire a houseboat and just stay in those backwaters for a long time. It's a land of so much biodiversity, mountains, lakes, rivers, and the backwaters. So definitely visit keralatourism.org would be a website. I should look at, so.
Good promo. That's nice. Well, you know, I should say I'm so happy. Last couple of years, you know, I go every year home because my parents are, almost everyone is there in India.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a couple of my siblings outside, they live in Dubai and so on. So when I go last two times, like, you know, 2017 as well as 16, also a couple of years before, I was so lucky. People asked me whether can we join you. So a few of the people came with me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's just... They know me, they're parishioners of my church, and I welcome. Okay, I said, you're most welcome. We have plenty of, we have big house, we have plenty of rooms to stay. If you want to stay, come on. Yeah. So I welcomed, and they were so happy and delighted. And we went beyond Kerala. So as you mentioned, I am from the northern part of Kerala. It's very hilly. It's like driving in California, you know. Mm-hmm. It's ups and down, nice curvy roads, and... we have some big, beautiful hill stations besides the backwaters. So typically telling they were there with me 20 days, they really enjoyed. So, of course, I was the main guy. And, of course, many of these people, those who asked me, they know me because I do a couple of other trips outside India too, you know, with my... I have a group of people with whom I go travel usually.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are going to Switzerland, Germany, and so on. So we had done a few trips. So some people from the group already asked me. In fact, for this year, there's a couple of already three people are coming with, and they already planned that way. So It is there's so much to see. There's so much to whatever BBC and National Geography and Travel Channel said is true, and it's really highly respected. Really, one thing I should tell you, it's thickly populated, correct?
True.
Yeah,
true.
It's thickly populated. You find lots of people. Be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of places you can, even in spite of the large number of people that you find, you can still find very peaceful, very nice accommodation, beautiful place to stay. And people are generally very friendly. And besides Kerala, of course, there are so many other things like one thing which everyone talks is Taj Mahal, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you go to India, you must see, you know, Taj Mahal. Certainly, that's a big, beautiful attraction. And the Golden Triangle of India, you know, Delhi, Agra, and Jaipur. That's what I did this time too with the people. So there are so many things. If you go on the tourism website, you'll find lots of things to see. So I'm so happy I could bring a few people to India with me. They travel with me.
Right. I should quickly add, you know, UW Parkside sponsored the first international conference on sustainable globalization in Kerala, India in January.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And so that was January 11, 12, 13. There were 86 participants from 14 different countries. And we got feedback from them regarding where we should have this conference next time. And the overwhelming majority said Kerala. So 2019, we're going to have the same conference, the second international conference, January 10, 11, and 12. So if anybody would like to visit Kerala, if you're in academia, then you could present a paper. The website is icsg.world, icsg.world. And I think we are launching today the website, so people could submit a paper.
Excellent.
And if you don't want to be a part of the conference, then following the conference, there's also a 7-day Taste of Kerala trip that we're organizing around the state. And that's open to anyone who'd like to come. So Jan 2019 would be the year to come with either Father Steve or with me.
And for people just tuning in, this has become Parkside Today, the travel show. we're travel show and going to Kerala. Well, I appreciate both of you taking the time to be on Parkside Today. And like I said, the half hour always goes by far too quickly. Father Steve Varghese from St. Joseph's and St. John Nepomuk Churches in Racine, and Dr. Abby Kuravilla here at UW Parkside. Thank you for being on Parkside Today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you, John.